everyone, and welcome to a brand new episode of Inside the Ropes Retro Raw Rundown. My name is Kenny McIntosh. I'm joined, as always, by my partner in crime, the beautiful, the voluptuous, the charismatic enigma that is Sondra.
I'm a charismatic enigma? Does that make me Brother Nero?
I knew you'd come. So we're here to talk about Raw episode 198 from February 24th, 1997. This was the shits.
It was terrible. Thank you. I wasn't sure if it was just terrible because it was me and I just wasn't feeling the ECW thing. Because here's the thing, right? Like, this show, going into it, last week we had Paul Heyman on the phone talking to Jerry Lawler. There's a lot of tension going on and everything feels very... You know, like Jerry Lawler, we know in real life, doesn't like Paul Heyman, and he invites Paul Heyman to Raw, so we're going to have the ECW invasion of Monday Night Raw, right? And it sounds, in theory, like that could make for an exciting show, and like that could make for a good show, and that could be interesting to find out what happens when ECW invades Monday Night Raw. And oh, fuck me, was this boring. And I didn't know if it was just because I never watched ECW. You thought it was terrible too?
So I had seen bits of this when I was younger because Jamie Miller, one of our listeners, during this point when we were kids, we were watching wrestling together. We were talking about it all the time at school and stuff. And I remember seeing bits of this show, but I never saw the full episodes. I don't remember. But like I was watching it and I think it has some like notable happenings. But the notable happenings could be done in 10 minutes. Like, that's the problem.
And it's an hour and a half long. It took me, I think, 3 hours to watch this show because I kept getting bored and pausing it and doing anything else.
Well, so I basically am going to have loads of notes for this show that's hopefully going to make the conversation a little bit more exciting. There apparently was very real heat going into this show with Paul Heyman and Jerry Lawler because... last week on Raw, when Paul Heyman was on the phone, he brought up the Neighborhood Watch program.
Mm-hmm. He said, if the Neighborhood Watch lets you in the neighborhood or something like that. I remember that line.
Which basically, because if MD remembers, Jerry Lawler was supposed to be on a team at the 1993 Survivor Series, which would be Jerry the King Lawler and his Knights against Bret Hart and the Hart family. And then Jerry Lawler was accused of... He was accused of a sexual activity with an underage girl. That was, I don't want to say the word but he was found not guilty. There wasn't evidence to prove he did it. He was proven to be innocent he was concluded as innocent. So that is what it is. And I think he was very annoyed that Heyman had alluded to something like that on the show. But apparently by this point, they had sort of, everything that was done on this show was all pre-planned. They'd all went through it together and it was a professional thing, even though you can tell they pretty much can't stand each other.
The tension is palpable throughout the show, for sure. It was actually the most interesting part of the show was some of that tension feeling very real, because it was very real.
Exactly. So there's that. So we'll kind of go through some notes of various things. Obviously, Mark Merrow had Mark Merrow had actually found his knee was injured the week before, and we now know by this point that he's actually going to be out for 6 months. That's how long he's going to be out. Ahmed Johnson was originally one of the reasons that this show in particular is quite bad is because most of the crew are in Europe for the European tour, and obviously next week is the European Championship show, so everybody, Bret Hart, Sid, Vader, Mankind, everybody's in Europe.
Most of the ones that I like then are not on this show.
So everybody else, you know, the everybody else is on this show, and then obviously they bring in ECW to kind of, you know, perk things up a little bit.
So is that why they did the ECW thing? Because they knew that a lot of the crew was going to be in Europe, so they were like, we need to fill this 2-hour show somehow, because we just made Raw 2 hours for some reason, apparently because of the Nitro ratings thing. I think you've brought that up before. So hey, ECW, like, this is probably in your notes, but what was the working relationship with WWE and ECW at this point?
So at this point, basically, WWF had decided that they were going to showcase ECW a little bit, and then the idea is that they could have a sort of unwritten agreement where, you know, maybe they could get guys from ECW once they'd worked down there for a while, come up to the WWF. Maybe some guys who were in WWF would go down to ECW. You know, it was pretty clear here that, like, if this angle went well, that Jerry Lawler could go down to ECW and become a great heel there. Because, you know, would there be anybody as a bigger heel in the ECW arena than Jerry the King Lawler?
Yeah, probably not. No, I mean, is it similar to kind of the relationship that they're cultivating with promotions like Evolve right now?
In a sense, yeah.
It's, I mean, I know that it's a different situation, but is it kind of like development on the indies, kind of we can have a working relationship and mention them? And
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of – that's the most similar thing you could think about. The other thing is, as well, is that Steve Austin, I think it was at the Final Four to Hammond, actually, he got a partial tear of his posterior cruciate ligament, and he's going to be out of action until WrestleMania.
Oh, really?
So he'll be on the shows, but he won't be wrestling. So that's why, like, he wasn't wrestling last week on TV. He was supposed to go to Europe, but he's not going to go to Europe. But one of the guys who wasn't supposed to go to Europe, who would have been on this show, was Ahmed Johnson, but he was then pulled from the domestic shows and sent to Europe along with Billy Gunn as well, to sort of help beef up the roster a little bit because they couldn't have Austin on
the tour. Billy Gunn is working live events at this point?
Yes.
Interesting. Has he been working live events ever since his terrible, terrible injury at the hands of dastardly babyface Bart Gunn?
No, so this, they basically have pulled him out of his quote-unquote injury to go and work the European tour with Ahmed Johnson.
Okay, because, like, I know that he's not on TV for I don't know how long, because I don't know how long this storyline goes until he debuts on TV. But he's just doing live events, right? Like, we don't see him until he re-debuts.
No, okay. Exactly. So this is only going to be for the house shows in Europe that he'll be wrestling.
See, I like that I'm speaking as though I don't want to spoil anything from myself.
Even though exactly.
Even though I clearly know.
But yeah, so this was like, I mean, I loved that they did this show in the Manhattan Center. Like, I loved it, but it's interesting because obviously at this point the rating wars are really big between WWF and WCW, but, like, you've got Nitro, who are selling out these arenas with 10,000 people or whatever, and WWF are in a small building in New York that houses 1,000 people.
I was just going to ask how many people it housed, because, I mean, they just did a Raw. I mean, Royal Rumble Raw was in the Sky Dome, so they can sell big arenas.
This one had they wouldn't have been able to do that every week.
No, but I mean, they have, like, for a Raw, they could do it. So, I mean, like, a 5,000 person arena would be nothing.
Well, at this point, they weren't really drawing that. So a lot of the buildings that we've seen them in were at the very most 5,000, but usually a little bit smaller.
That's true. I guess the Lowell, Massachusetts building isn't huge. I mean, NXT was running live events there recently, so...
Mm-hmm. So yeah, but the Raw at the Manhattan Center did draw a sellout of 1,000 people. But, as you know, it's New York. There's no way they're gonna not sell at the Manhattan Center in New York. Mm-hmm. And the product was getting hotter as well. I loved seeing the show in the Manhattan Center again, but there was an argument at the time from some of the sort of journalists in wrestling that it maybe looked a little bit bush league for them to be in the Manhattan Center while Nitro is, you know, in huge arenas and all that sort of stuff. What did you think of the Manhattan Center? Because you obviously don't have the emotional connection to the Manhattan Center that a lot of old school wrestling fans who are maybe listening to this podcast do, because this was obviously where the first kind of 9 or 10 months of Raw was. This is a building that a lot of old school WWF fans get a kick out of seeing.
I mean, I can't remember if I watched the entire first episode of Raw or if I've just seen clips of the first episode of Raw from 1993. I have seen some of the first episode of Raw, at least. And so I know the building from that, but I don't really have that connection to it. For me, it's kind of like whenever they go back to Madison Square Garden and everyone's like, oh my gosh, Madison Square Garden, it's the biggest thing in the world. And to me, it's just like, that's cool. And I understand that it has a lineage, but I don't get that feeling of connection to it. Probably because I'm not someone who gets attached to venues in general. I just can't tell the difference between them a lot of the time. And some of that could be just because in my wrestling fandom, they've made every venue look the same. It's always the same HD set. It's always the same you know, pay-per-view setup or whatever, like, except for WrestleMania, and sometimes SummerSlam looks a little bit different, but usually things just kind of look the same, and I'm fine with it. It doesn't really bother me the way it bothers you, right? Because I never really knew anything different. So I get the fact that going back to the Manhattan Center is pretty cool just because of the historical context of it, and, you know, it should feel different and whatnot, but it didn't really do anything. I think it's a cool looking venue, so I like the way that it looked, just like I like the way the Massachusetts one looked, because you can see the balconies and it does look different to some of the other arenas that they go to, but it wasn't anything that I was like, oh my gosh, this is the coolest thing in the world, they're going back to the Manhattan Center.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting to talk about that kind of stuff. Another note for the before we start the show, the show that airs next week, the European Championship, is taped on the 26th of February. So it's taped on, like, the Wednesday.
Okay.
So the crew are already in Europe. The
Berlin Wall show that they keep advertising throughout this episode.
Yes, exactly. but the show in Berlin on the 26th of February would be aired on a tape delay that night on Sky in Europe, which is where European fans or UK fans would have seen it as a WWF European Championship special. On a Wednesday night, Jim Ross and JR were both scheduled to be there as the commentators, but Jim Ross's dad passed away a couple of days before the show, so he was taking time off for that. And also, just a very random note that I thought was interesting, obviously Yokozuna made his last appearance to the WWF in 1996 Survivor Series, but he at this point in February is at a fat camp trying to lose weight to try and come back. There was talk of him doing liposuction, but he had at this point in February lost more than 200 pounds, most of which apparently was fluid retention. And he is planned at this point to go and get liposuction to try and be in a manageable weight to come back later in 1997.
Oh, okay.
Which does not happen.
Right.
So,
because that's kind of, that's the sad story about Yokozuna, is he had a really serious food addiction and he just never could kick it, basically.
Yeah, and that's but even at this point in February of 97, they are doing things to try and get him back,
mm-hmm.
but it just wasn't to be. But let's get into this horrible, horrible show, as I've avoided us talking about it enough. We kick it off with the Godwins in the ring. They're going to face the New Blackjacks, who debuted on Shotgun Saturday night. They were then on Sunday Morning Superstars.
yeah, we saw vignettes for the New Blackjacks, and there was something about a claw and a glove, and they were around a fire, and it was cool, and I was like, yeah, New Blackjacks, I have no idea who you're going to be. I did not expect Barry Windham and Bradshaw.
So let's talk through the New Blackjacks, Sandra.
Yes.
Let's first of all talk about Bradshaw and your thoughts.
He's so shit, Bradshaw is. Like, he is terrible, right? That's not just me.
Oh, he's the drizzling shits.
Because he's really bad. I mean, the best thing about him is his mustache. But Barry Windham hasn't beat on that. Well, yeah, good clothesline too, I guess. But, like, I mean, there's just really nothing to Bradshaw. Like, at all. I don't really understand the Bradshaw thing. Last time we saw Bradshaw, was that when he was...
Justin Hawk Bradshaw.
Well, he was Justin Hawk Bradshaw, and he branded Zeb Coulter, right?
Uncle Zebekiah, but yep.
Yes, Uncle Zebekiah. Did he never had a last name then? Did they make the last name when he came back with Jack Swagger? Was that a thing?
I think that they just probably thought, you know what? We had him Uncle Zebekiah before. Let's call him Zeb and give him a surname, yeah.
Yeah, and it was probably a take on Ann Coulter.
yeah, well, now that I think about it, yeah.
Yeah, right. But even though they spelled it differently, but... So, why did they put Bradshaw in the New Blackjacks? Like, he branded Uncle Zebekiah, so Uncle Zebekiah is just gone. And I guess I've only seen Bradshaw a couple times, because I don't even remember who he fought or what he did, because it wasn't very notable. And now he's with Barry Windham as a New Blackjack, so it's weird, because we're only watching Raws. We're not watching Shotgun Saturday Night anymore. We're not watching Superstars. I'm not going to start watching Shotgun Saturday Night and Superstars because...
Well, barely, like Shotgun Saturday Night, I think the Saturday before this was the last original episode.
The one that was in the train station?
Yeah. And then from then on, it became a thing where I think starting March 10th, they start taping it before Raw. And it's just like matches. It's not really any, it's not really big storyline stuff anymore.
It's basically like Superstars is now, right?
Yeah. And then Superstars, which up until this point really was the B show in terms of like storylines were furthered. You know, because sometimes we would watch Raws and be like, where does this angle come from?
Yeah, there's a lot of that.
But like Superstars stops in the within the next week or two. And Raw is the one show.
Oh, so Superstars isn't even a thing anymore then?
In the next couple of weeks, yeah. It changes to becoming a recap show.
Oh, okay. So again, more like Superstars is now than Superstars then.
Exactly. But so talk to me. So, I mean, to answer your question, I think the reason that Bradshaw was put in the new Blackjacks was just that, you know, Barry Windham was the son of Blackjack Mulligan.
Mm-hmm.
They needed somebody to kind of fill the Blackjack Lanza role. Bradshaw is a big burly Texan.
Like, he was sort of a cowboy, so why not be a Blackjack?
Yeah, well, because if you were working in the office or whatever, I guess if you looked at the roster, you were like, well, who else would kind of suit being a Blackjack?
Well, why not pair the Stalker up with Justin Hawk Bradshaw? I mean,
yeah, I mean, if he's a big bastard that can hit a good clothesline, he's from Texas, like, and he's not doing anything, you know, it's not like he's on TV anyway.
What I think is remarkable is how similar Bradshaw and Windham look. Like, there was one point, Mr. Sandra is always sort of in and out of the room when I'm watching Retro Raw, and he's sometimes the one who's like, why do you have this pause? Aren't you supposed to be doing homework? And I'm like, yes, I'm supposed to be doing homework. I'll play it again, whatever, as I'm looking at Twitter. So, you know, thank Mr. Sandra for the fact that I got through this show. And so he comes and he's like, is that Bradshaw? And it was actually Barry Windham in the ring. He didn't realize that Bradshaw was even part of the team. He just saw a person with a big black mustache and thought it was Bradshaw. They look very similar. It's weird. But I think Barry Windham's mustache is far more glorious than Bradshaw's.
Why? What about it is
it's
more
glorious? It's curlier. It's bushier.
Now, you obviously, when we started Retro Raw, one of your initial loves was the Stalker. I know that Ollie Clark on Twitter had sent you a video of one of the Stalker's vignettes, which obviously you being an absolute mentalist of a wrestling fan had already seeked out every Stalker clip available.
There was one night where I went on YouTube and watched all of the Stalker vignettes I could find. Yes, that's true. That happened.
But talk to me about your former love returning to the World Wrestling Federation and what you thought overall of Barry Windham taking his father's lineage and continuing it as a new Blackjack.
I mean, this was a very difficult match for me to watch. First of all, because it was shit.
This was a very... you're talking like one of the participants was your husband who died. Oh, this was such a difficult match to watch.
Well, it was, Kenny. You know how delicate my heart can be when I fall in love with a wrestler. But this was very difficult for me because the Stalker was my first Retro Raw wrestling love. He was. And in my notes, and I believe I sent this to you, I actually have the points. This match is fairly boring, but look at those mustaches. So there was definitely something that, you know, I was like, but those mustaches are incredible. But also it just made me miss the Stalker so, so much. Because, you know, I mean, I'm glad to see Barry Windham again. I'm glad that if he stopped painting his face and, you know, broke it. It's hard, right? Like, when you have a love and then they break your heart so badly by not wearing face paint at the Survivor Series. And then they come back with an incredible mustache, but also they're teaming with Bradshaw, who you sort of hate. It's like, I'm glad that you've moved on in your life because I still have love for you, but I don't know if I support your life decisions right now, even if your mustache is incredible. So it was very complex in terms of my emotions during the Godwins versus the new Blackjacks. Also, how can I possibly care about the Godwins? I mean, it's not like we're going to go through this point by point in the match, because the match was so boring.
No, we are not.
It was so boring. And the only thing to cling to was the fact that Barry Windham is back and also the mustaches. But it's very strange because at the end, Barry Windham pins Phineas Godwin, but Phineas's foot was on the rope and the ref didn't see it because, you know, referees, right? Like, of course he didn't see it. And then a second ref has to come down to dispute the decision because we need to protect the Godwins of all people. Because the Godwins matter?
The thing that's funny is, so Phineas has got like Barry Windham in like a sleeper, and then Bradshaw breaks up with the
clothes. I almost fell asleep.
And Bradshaw ends up putting what we now know as the clothesline from hell onto Phineas. And Barry Windham, for whatever reason, has lost all athletic ability that he has. He falls, literally falls, onto Phineas. He looks like he's just on a 5K run, right?
Yeah.
And he has done nothing in this match. He has done... Bradshaw is the one who runs. Windham's done nothing.
I think he might have done a half move or two, but yeah,
and then
you're right.
His mustache is still in a perfect position. Mm-hmm. So he's lying there.
Maybe that's why I think his mustache is more glorious, because it hasn't been touched.
Maybe, because he did fuck all. And then... So Phineas has got his foot in the rope, and then you just see Barry Windham very briefly look at the foot and go, oh, fuck, I need to get my arm over there and move that foot off. The one thing he's got to do. And then he did it so like, groggy. And then the other ref comes out because, you know, we do need to, you know, protect the integrity of the Godwins.
Of course, we need to protect the integrity of the fucking Godwins. Phineas Godwin is in this match way more than Phineas Godwin should be in any match.
He is particularly awful.
He is terrible. Like, Henry Godwin, to be fair, is not shit. Henry Godwin is fine. Like, I wouldn't say that Henry Godwin is amazing or anything, but Henry Godwin can wrestle, and I would, you know, I'd be fine seeing a Henry Godwin match. Phineas is in this match, and maybe this is just because every time Phineas is on screen, I'm just like, no, let it be over. But, I mean, it's not going to get over with Phineas in there, but whatever. Phineas seemed like he was in this match a good while, and Henry was not in this match nearly enough. I don't understand why they keep tagging in Phineas. I mean, even on commentary, when they're like, Henry, and I don't know if they said it in this match, but they have before, where they're like, Henry Godwin is the brains and the brawn. Like, what the fuck is Phineas there for then? Like, why? Why does he even exist?
It's baffling. And then, you know, it all ends well because Henry Godwin slops the referee, Mike Chioda, and he falls and slips and falls and slips about four times.
It's true. Is this the first slop we've actually seen on Retro Raw? Because I can't remember another.
Yeah, because we started after Sonny got slopped.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is the first one.
Because I've heard of slopping, right? Like, I remember the interview with Henry Godwin, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about slopping Sonny and everything and whatnot. So I've heard of the fact that they dump slop on people, but I had not actually seen it up until this point. And I was like, now I've seen that. And that was my reaction. That was about as excited as I was to see baby Mike Chioda get slopped, because I just don't care.
Up next, we had, out of nowhere, the Eliminators from ECW hit the ring with Paul Heyman.
Those are the Eliminators?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I wondered who they were. That was my question, because I just have written down, after an ad break, two guys beat up a quote-unquote ring attendant. And I didn't know who they were. Knowing that they're the Eliminators is really interesting, because they have the original Total Elimination, which is now the Fall of Man, done by the Ascension, even though we don't see it very often, because the Ascension really gets to hit a finisher. But I remember Bob DeGrand explaining to me that the Fall of Man was Total Elimination. So there you are.
There you go. Throwback to Bob. Peace up, Bob.
This show is one where I really wish that he were still around, because ECW was his thing. Like, he was really into ECW in the 90s and everything. And yeah. I just couldn't be bothered to care about most of the stuff on this show, because I've never seen ECW.
Here's my problem with Total Elimination. The guy had to stand there while they were clearly setting up to hurt him,
mm-hmm.
and he just stood there and let it happen. That bothered me. I hate wrestling moves where somebody stands there. Like, I'm not saying they have to like fight back, but like duck or something. Like,
well,
do something.
You know my least favorite move in wrestling, right? Is where someone bends over their head to be either kicked or hit in the face. I hate it. I actually audibly, and Mr. Sonder can attest to this, I audibly just go grr whenever it happens because it angers me so much. Like, when we're actually watching wrestling together, I'm sure that you will hear me be very annoyed at this spot because it will inevitably happen in one of the 20,000 matches we're going to see over WrestleMania weekend. I hate it. And Goldust...
Well, it'll be similar to when I see five wrestlers huddle up together and watch for the man about to dive on top of them.
Yeah, no, I hate that one too. Like, that's a little bit lower on my list of hatred, but it's the same level of reaction.
I wonder if we'll all groan audibly at the same time when Dean Ambrose does his do-si-do.
Probably. Like, I'll just be like, ugh.
What was interesting here was on the network version, which is what I think most of us are watching it on, they've clearly cut something from the commentary, because when the BWO are about to come out, the camera is focused on the commentators, and you can see Jerry Lawler's mouth moving, but there's no commentary on the show.
What have they cut?
At that point, I don't know. And then the music's very low, so there's I don't know what it is. There's something that they cut, but
I don't think I was paying that much attention. But I mean, you're right, we did get
Big Stevie Cool versus Little Guido in just a kind of a, I guess, an exhibition match, but there's a very funny, very funny moment where basically at the end of it, Raven shows up.
Yeah.
And Vince McMahon calls him Stevie Ray.
I know, I was like, isn't that like...
Harlem Heat Stevie Ray,
right?
The black man.
Stevie Ray Huffman. Like.
And then, to be fair to Paul Heyman, Paul Heyman said that Vince needs to watch the tapes Bruce Pritchard puts in his desk every Monday morning.
My favorite thing is that right after he calls him Stevie Ray, Heyman's like, that's Raven, the ECW champion. And then immediately Heyman's like, Vince McMahon, you have impressed me as an announcer. And he like offers him a job. If this WWF thing doesn't work out for you, you could come to Extreme Championship Wrestling and be an announcer. It's so disingenuous, and it's a delight.
It is, but in the end, the Stevie kick is the finisher, and the BWO reigns supreme, and good God. Like, it's funny because, like, I feel like with ECW, and I know David McCutcheon is our, like, standard ECW fan here inside
right.
the ropes, and I like watching the odd ECW thing, but some of that stuff is dog shit.
I just don't get it. Like, I mean, this match for me... consider from my perspective, like, anyone who's like, why doesn't she like this ECW invasion, right? Like, my friend Shane was like, oh, well, how do you like this? And I was like, I am so bored right now, I can't even tell you. And he was kind of disappointed that I didn't like the show. Consider, I never watched WCW. I never watched ECW. So right now, seeing Little Guido, who I don't know who that is, except for the fact that he was on Art of Wrestling fairly recently, so I heard him on Colt Cabana's podcast, so I've heard the name Little Guido, and I've sort of heard his story. It made me like him a little bit more, but I don't really remember the details of that podcast and also can't be bothered to care. Versus someone in the BWO, it's like the BWO is an ECW thing, which is a takeoff from the NWO from WCW. Lawler actually says on commentary that the BWO is just another ECW ripoff, and Heyman's like, who are they ripping off? And Lawler's just like, give me a break, because they don't want to say WCW apparently on commentary. Like, it's very clear that he doesn't want to say the letters WCW, and Heyman's like goading them into trying to get him to say it, but which made me laugh actually kind of a lot, because Heyman's just being a dick and I love it. But this is like a ripoff of something that I also didn't watch, and I will never fully understand the NWO because there are so many branches. And before anyone starts sending me loads of clips of the NWO, I've seen too many Monday Night Wars documentaries. I can't be bothered to care. I'm not going to do it. So
the only way, and I'm not saying we're doing it right now, but you know, maybe in the future in a different time, if we were to watch the stuff week to week for a while, and you were to actually watch that stuff, that's probably the only way that you would actually get a feel for the NWO.
Yeah, because I don't think that I can get a feel for it in isolation and isolated clips of stuff that they've done. I've seen enough of those clips to last
me
a lifetime.
You've seen, it's like, you know, how many times have you seen the clip of, oh, I'm trying to think. You know, there's always like a famous clip you'll see of something. You'll see the clip of Joey and Friends wearing everybody else's clothes.
Yeah.
But if you've not watched the episode, Do you really get what it's... Anyway.
No, I mean, and that's the interesting part about Retro Raw. As much as I'm complaining about it right now, at least I'm seeing everything in context, so I have a more valid opinion of things, I think, than, you know, just saying, like, oh, all the women's stuff was shit, or, you know, Steve Austin was the greatest, or whatever. Like, I'm actually getting to see it progress week to week, which is why this experiment has been good, albeit time-consuming. So... You know, like, it gives me more of a valid context for everything that happened historically. Seeing clips and things just doesn't really paint a full picture. And I am not going to commit right now to watching every Nitro to get a full picture of the NWO.
You will. You would do it on your own, mate. I've got no time.
Yeah.
The thing that's interesting about this show was when the ratings came in for this episode... The ECW segments on this show, which, you know, the crowd are more invested in, they were the highest segments of the show, ratings-wise.
Well, it's interesting because the crowd responds really well to ECW as well. I mean, they're in New York, so it makes sense.
Because this is almost like, there's no way for me to convey to you how big a deal this was. Like, this is another wrestling promotion. Like, this is almost like, it's not the same thing, but... Imagine, like, Prince Puma, Mil Muertes, and some of the Lucha Underground guys just, you know, jumped the barrier at Raw.
That was actually something that occurred to me watching the show, that I think a lot of my malaise while watching it is just because I'm not familiar with ECW as a promotion, and I'm not invested in it. And if it would be, like, if today, if Lucha Underground invaded Raw, or if... Well, I mean, some of the Chikara guys are on Monday Night Raw, but it's in 3-minute cruiserweight segments, so that's unfortunate. But, you know, if Lucha Underground guys, if Drago and if Mil Muertes and if, you know, Phoenix and Pentagon Jr., Pentel Cerro Miedo, or whatever he's calling himself now, like, if they just came into Raw for a week and had a bunch of segments just as them and had a bunch of Lucha Underground segments on Raw, I would absolutely lose my shit because I'm invested in those characters and I'm invested in their stories and I'm invested in what's going on with them. I'm just not invested in ECW and their stories and their characters and what's going on with them, which isn't to say that they're necessarily bad. I don't know. Like, I just haven't watched them. So, but it's hard to be connected to it when I don't have any frame of reference. So for me, it was really easy to tune out, especially because during all of the ECW matches, did you notice this? They had interviews with WWF superstars during every ECW match. Like, there's a Goldust interview there's a Goldust interview in Little Guido versus Big Stevie Cool, where Goldust is basically like he's the premier and everyone else is just B movies, and then there are technical difficulties and he's talking about, like, I mean, Goldust sounds so bored to even be there. I was like, you're not helping my level of excitement, mate. Like, at least put a little effort in when you're asking about Marlena, and because they were asking Goldust about the upcoming Marlena arm wrestling match with Sunny, and he's like, he's here to watch and make sure that man, that woman, that it doesn't interfere. Which is very bizarre coming from Goldust as a character. And also knowing that Goldust has a trans stepson now. Like, it's just kind of strange to hear him being like, that man, that woman, that it, whatever. Because that's how they're treating China at this point.
It's interesting. we basically go from this ECW match to...
What was the point of Raven coming out, by the way?
The point was basically just to get as many ECW guys on the show.
Okay, because they do it later on, like with people coming out during matches too. And
yeah, it's just a case of, like, you know, you've got three segments, get people out as much as you can.
Yeah.
You know, so...
Vince's La Femme Nikita promo was not nearly as good this week, by the way.
No, he just said it was going to be action, hot action.
Yeah, you know, like last week, I think I forgot to say that his Femme Nikita promo was something about body scissors, because I think... I don't know if it was a week ago or 2 weeks ago, but Crush had someone in, like, a really shit body scissors. And he was like, speaking of body scissors, how would you like to be body scissored by La Femme Nikita? And I forgot to mention it on the show, so I'm mentioning it now because the one this week was kind of shit.
Oh, Vince. Up next, we got a promo from Sunny talking about she's going to beat Marlena in the upcoming arm wrestling match.
She's in a sexy robe.
She is. And then we get Honky Tonk Man coming out, and it's funny because I have a memory of how I felt about the Honky Tonk Man back then, and it's kind of becoming a little bit different now, like, because what, like, I grew up with the Honky Tonk Man in WWF. So when I was like 12 and watching this, he just kind of felt part of WWF. Like, he felt like part of the furniture. And now watching it back, he just seems so out of place.
Why is he even here?
But I just mean in general with what they're trying to do. You know, you're in a war against WCW, who are, you know, have taken all of your top names and featured them heavily. You know, Vince McMahon wants to do the New Generation. And then WCW take Hogan and Savage and Piper, and they've got Sting and Luger and all these guys, and they're doing really well and they're winning the ratings and all that.
Because the New Generation was in response to WCW using loads of old wrestlers, right?
Well, the New Generation was in response to the steroid trial initially, because the steroid trial made it impossible for them to have all those jacked up guys anymore. So why not go for a new generation, guys like Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, the smaller guys, mm-hmm. and push in the more athletic aspect of it. And then obviously when WCW started getting all the older guys that WWF weren't using anymore, it was like, oh, people still really want to see Hulk Hogan. They still really want to see Randy Savage. They still really want to see Roddy Piper.
Randy Savage, who we pushed out because he was 40.
Mm-hmm.
As The Undertaker's still in, like, main programs at WrestleMania today. I digress.
It's so annoying. Like, it's so frustrating, the people that they let go for stupid reasons. So the Honky Tonk Man's here, is the point.
Yeah. He's a special guest referee for an arm wrestling contest between Sonny and Marlena. This could not go poorly at all, could it? Oh my goodness, why the Honky Tonk Man, of all people? Of all people, the Honky Tonk Man. Is he looking for Marlena to shake, rattle, and roll with those rib injuries? Like, I don't understand why you would choose the Honky Tonk Man. Like, he's supposed to be scouting talent who can sing, play the guitar, and shake, rattle, and roll. That is supposed to be the Honky Tonk Man's purpose here on Monday Night Raw. I don't think it's a good purpose. I think he should fuck off. But he's here, and we have to deal with him. I don't know what he's trying to accomplish witnessing this arm wrestling contest between Sonny and Marlena.
So the Honky Tonk Man's here for the arm wrestling match. And he's there, and Sonny comes out, and she has a robe on, and then she takes the robe off, and oh good god, like, I mean, she's just perfect.
She looks great.
Like, I weep for her 2017 self.
Yeah, like, I mean, she it looks must kill you. She's like 24 here or something.
Yeah, yeah. She's really, like, there's like a lot of famous women who look back and can go like, oh, I was hot then. Well, I'm still hot now. And, you know, she looks like a pair of pork chops now.
Well, I mean, look at someone like Lillian Garcia. She's near 50. Or is she 50?
Yeah, she's 50.
She looks incredible.
Mm.
Sonny's let herself go. But, I mean, she does still all the...
I wish she was still at the stage where she had just let herself go.
True.
She has now let the letting herself go part of herself go.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not wrong at all. It's funny because at the beginning of this segment, Mr. Sonder came into the room and he goes, my God, it's just, as a nation, were we collectively hornier in the 90s?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah, I think so. I wasn't allowed to be, but I think as a nation, yes.
I wasn't allowed to be.
That was wrong, damn it.
So Marlena comes out dressed in a very, very odd...
Marlena looks like she's going to do the Golden Buns of Steel.
The thing is, Marlena essentially comes out dressed like Jimmy Savile. That's the problem.
I don't understand that reference, but...
Jimmy Savile is an... Oh, this is horrible to have to put this across in the podcast. Jimmy Savile was a child's television presenter in the UK... who about 10 years ago, after he had died, was found out to be a massive paedophile.
Oh, great.
Who had been assaulting young girls from about the 70s onwards. And it had been covered up by the BBC.
Mm, that's always fun.
But he wore gold a lot. And I imagine that if Jimmy Savile was going to do an arm wrestling contest, he would wear Marlena's outfit.
See, I just kind of thought that she looked like Buns of Steel at the Oscars.
Both references work.
Because...
Both references work. Mine's is tasteless. Yours is less tasteless.
Like, my best friend Julie, growing up, she had, like, some Buns of Steel videos. And we did those workouts sometimes when we were, like, 11 or something. And that's just what it reminds me of, is 90s workout videos.
So we get the arm wrestling match.
Marlena's ribs are taped because, of course, when she was attacked by that woman... Who we still
Amazonian
don't know her name,
woman.
That Amazonian woman, when she was ragdolled around and everything, you know, that hurt her ribs and she'd been coughing up blood, but yet she's booked in this arm wrestling contest today because reasons. Why is this happening? They don't offer any reason.
They don't. But Marlene is basically about to win. And then yes. Sunny throws powder in her face, which, well, I mean, knowing Sunny, she's probably just thrown a large gram of cocaine into her face.
Well, she does have like a brick of something in her pants,
here's my question. If you watch this back, there is a moment when Sunny does this where you just hear from somewhere, "You fucking bitch!"
Yeah, that's true.
From a woman. Well, I don't know where this woman was.
I don't know.
But she was shouting. For a second, I thought it was you, Sandra, getting into my feet.
Time traveling, right? Time traveling and going to Monday Night Raw at the Manhattan Center because I wanted to watch this in person. No, I did not. If I'm going to time travel, I'm going to use it on something a little more worthwhile than going to see Monday Night Raw ECW Invasion at the Manhattan Center. Thank you very much. I saw the show in, 2017. I don't need to go relive it in real time.
But Marlena was not
My cell phone wouldn't have worked back then. I wouldn't have been able to check Twitter during the boring parts.
But in the end, now this is the weird thing. So for whatever reason, so Marlena obviously is... lost and she's pissed off. And then Savio Vega comes out.
For some reason? Like, what is he trying to do to Marlena? I was concerned for Marlena at this point.
Because, I feel like, is there, like, a notice somewhere in the guy's locker room going, like, Marlena's really horny and up for it. Like, so just go and see her whenever you're
Which
ready.
Which is because, weird, like, because Marlena is clearly not very horny and up for it from anyone but Goldust. Like, she's very up for it from Goldust when he bows down to worship her and they have their whole thing and they're married and it's cool. Like, I like the fact that they can play games and they can do what they want to do. That's fine. But every other man seems to think that, yeah, why can't I stick it in her too?
It's a problem.
It is a problem.
there is luckily, Goldust is always coming to the rescue. Always.
Yes, I'm glad. I actually have written down, Goldust comes to attack Savio, so thankfully we don't find out what his intentions were. I did like at the beginning of the arm wrestling contest that Sunny, like, begs off a few times to prolong the whole situation because she's like, nope, I need to do some push-ups. Nope, I need to warm up. Nope, I'm not ready for this. Whatever. And then, Marlena stops at, like, the third false start of the arm wrestling contest, because there are false starts to this arm wrestling contest. This is no Karate Fighters finale, ladies and gentlemen. This is... It wants to be that glorious. It's not quite, but it's probably the best part of the show, to be fair. And Marlena kind of begs off or whatever, and Honky Tonk Man's like, if you do this again, then I'm gonna disqualify you, because... Okay, sure, that's fair. Whatever. And Sunny does a promo beforehand, like, offering Marlena the chance to forfeit. And Marlena says she's glad Sunny stopped working 42nd Street long enough to be here. There's loads of prostitute talk from Marlena. Lawler's making comments the whole time. This segment, man. Like, it's probably the best part of the show. It's probably the most interesting part of the show.
we have this arm wrestling segment, which, it takes in the old school fans with the Honky Tonk Man involved. It takes in the...
Were there actually Honky Tonk Man fans? Like, did those exist?
I loved it when he got in the ring, the first thing you hear somebody going, "You suck!"
Yeah, and they're not wrong. They are correct.
And then you have, obviously, for all the horny teenagers, you have Sunny and Marlena. So Savio comes out, and then Goldust, attacks him. And then we come back, and it's turned into a Savio Vega versus Goldust match, which
had been advertised, I believe.
Which, oh my god, could you get a sloppier match than that? And
and we just saw the Godwins versus the New Blackjacks, keep in mind.
This is true. Now, the ECW contingent in the building were chanting Candido at Sunny.
Oh, is that what they were chanting? I didn't catch it.
because this was still like, you know, this is pre-internet, so people didn't know that she was giving it to Skip of the Body Donnas. But the WWF at this point had signed Miguel Perez to the World Wrestling Federation, and he had been signed because he was due to go and meet WCW, but WWF signed him first. He's a great Mexican wrestler. He had a match on a Nitro, I think, the year before with Juventud Guerrera. It went really, really well. The Juice from Mexico, and his chickens. Or the Juice who randomly turns up inside the rope shows in London with a hat on. Yes. We'll never forget that.
I just liked when he was walking around up in the balcony back where I was sitting in his mask and everything. It was great.
Was it you? Because somebody came up to me. So here's the thing, right? So we're in London for the Paul Heyman gigs.
It's my favorite
And I have this voicemail. I'm like, who is this from? It's a voicemail from Juventud Guerrera. And I don't know how he got my number. He's like, hello, I'm wanting to come to the show.
Before the London show.
Yeah, and he's like, can I get some tickets? So I said to Paul, I was like, you know, I should not tell a story. Don't repeat this. So I was like, you know, Juventud wants to come to the show. What do you think? And Paul's like, yeah, I mean, that'd be cool. And you could tell he was kind of like, yeah, that'd be cool, but like, you know, I mean, Hoovy's a handful, you know, like that was the look that I was getting. So I was like, I'll just not respond. And then maybe that's the best way to go. And Paul just kind of shook his head as if to be like, I think you made the right call, Kenny. I was like, okay, good. we're all good. And then we get to the show and we're all good. And somebody walked up to me. I can't remember if it was you, Sandra, or somebody said, I need to talk to you for a second. I was like, yeah, sure. And they were like, Juventud Guerrera's here.
It wasn't me, because you told me that he was there.
And I was like, sorry, who's here? So then, Juventud comes to the show. And at one point, we actually, you know, give him a mention. And he waves like he's the queen at the top of the fucking balcony. And at the end of the show, Juvie's like, oh, can I come say hi to Paul? And I came and said, look, you know, Paul, Juventud is outside. He wants to say hello. And Paul's like, okay, fair enough. I'll bring him through. Yeah, you know, Paul was always going to see him, but it was kind of almost like, you know, oh, okay, you know, he's here. I guess I should meet him. And then Juventud comes in the room and Paul's like, Hoovy Juice! And just like,
he's like, look great. Because I was there for the meeting, because I think that was like right before the show started. Like, we were all eating pizza or whatever.
So you explain this meeting. So Paul Heyman, who has been semi-reluctant for Juventud Guerrero to be there or come backstage.
Because this is, I think, probably about an hour to maybe like half an hour before meet and greet is supposed to start, right? Like, before we're going to open the doors for everybody to come and meet Paul Heyman. So we're getting ready to do everything. I'm eating like my last bit of pizza before having to like queue everyone up in line and, you know, do stuff. And Juventud Guerrero walks in the door. He's like, he's in his cowboy hat and, you know, jeans and whatever. And just, I didn't recognize him because I don't know who he is, but whatever. Like, people who watched wrestling during that time, they know who Juventud Guerrero is. And Paul Heyman throws his arms out and he's like, Hoovy, oh my gosh, it's so good to see you. You look great. You haven't aged a bit. And he's like, yeah, let's get a picture together. Like,
and then all I remember hearing was Hoovy going, I've filmed a new show. You should check it out. And Paul's like, I'd love to. And
I'm like, absolutely. Yeah, that's great. It's so good to see you.
And in my head, I'm going, you motherfucker. Like, you, that was the moment, ladies and gentlemen, that I knew how great of a worker Paul Heyman really was.
He's amazing.
It is genuinely a joy to watch him at work. It's so impressive. So WWF had decided to, because this was an era, and some people know this already, some people don't, but this was an era where, like, if somebody was a free agent, like, both companies were going to go for them. So it was like, you had to snap somebody up. So WWF snapped up
Miguel Perez, who it's interesting because the way they introduce him is, here's this guy on commentary who's also from Puerto Rico.
Now, do you know what's funny is you said, interesting, because if there was one thing that I could say to describe Miguel Perez in color commentary, it is not interesting.
True, you make a fair point. They don't say that he's a wrestler, though. Like, they just, basically, I was watching this, and I actually was paying attention at this point, because I did make sure to pay attention to the show, because I didn't want to ask questions that sounded stupid, and you're like, come on, Sandra, like, they said this, you should have been paying attention, right? So I actually paid attention, which is why it took me 3 hours to watch this show, because it was really hard to pay attention, but I did. Miguel Perez is on commentary. I have no idea who he is, but he's not proud of Savio Vega. And also, why are you here, Miguel Perez? Like, because Puerto Rico? Like, did they just pluck someone from Puerto Rico and say, hey, there's this Puerto Rican guy who just turned heel. We need someone else from Puerto Rico to comment on Savio Vega, who is from Puerto Rico. That's all I got. It wasn't until, I think, near the end of the match or whatever. No, it was like after the match when Miguel Perez actually gets involved after Crush causes the DQ and he does a drop kick or whatever. I'm like, oh, apparently he is a wrestler. They never say on commentary. They don't introduce him properly to someone who hasn't seen him before, which is probably most of their audience. Because if you're a WWF audience, how familiar are you going to be with Puerto Rican wrestler Miguel Perez?
Oh, he was so shit, though.
Like, oh, it was really bad. I mean, he's basically talking commentary. About how he's not proud of Savio Vega. And, like, I'm just like, why are you here, Miguel Perez? And he doesn't seem to know why he's there either. And the funny part is, you know when he speaks Spanish?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it seems like they seem to get the feeling that, like, he's not that comfortable doing this in English. Because he's like, I don't know what he's doing or whatever. So they're like, do you want to say something to people, you know, in Spanish? You know what he says in Spanish?
What?
The exact same thing he says in English. He's just like, you know, he thanks Puerto Rico, or he thanks Latin America and especially Puerto Rico for their support of Savio Vega. He doesn't know what Savio's doing now, but viva Puerto Rico and vivo Latino America. And that's all he says. Like, he doesn't say anything extra at all, because I rewound it just to make sure. Like, my Spanish isn't as good as it used to be, but it didn't have to be for this, because he doesn't fucking say anything.
Well, and then in the end, we've got this, like, you know, very sluggish, generic, rubbish Goldust Savio Vega match, as always.
Mm-hmm.
And Crush runs in for the DQ, and then Miguel Perez gets in to help Goldust, and we get a sort of big brawl, and Miguel Perez and Goldust are kind of standing tall at the end, and now Miguel Perez is apparently part of the World Wrestling Federation to feud with Savio Vega.
Apparently.
And I just can't get excited about it.
I question his decision-making when he's wearing all white to do wrestling.
He just looks like a dad.
Kind of. Yeah.
But then, if you know, baffling as that was in its presentation, the more baffling thing is Jerry the King Lawler, who, you know, Ken Shamrock has been, and we will get to Ken Shamrock.
I was going to say, I actually have in my notes the evolution of Ken Shamrock versus, like, during this mm-hmm. episode of Monday Night Raw, and
because he was shown earlier on the show, because they were like, is that Ken Shamrock?
Yes, because in the Godwins versus the New Blackjacks, he is in the crowd. Like, Ken Shamrock is in the audience. And they're like, that's Ken Shamrock. He's the ultimate fighting champion or whatever. It was very weird to hear UFC just called out on the show, by the way. Like, it's just very weird. Like, now in 2017, knowing how they feel about UFC and how UFC feels about them. And I know they kind of work together with the whole Brock Lesnar thing. But, you know, like, it was just weird because they were clearly like, UFC doesn't matter. We can just completely promote them here, basically. And I believe it was during the arm wrestling contest, we find out Ken Shamrock is chewing gum because they show him chewing gum very loudly or largely, or I don't know. Like, he's really into that gum chewing, basically, when they show him on camera. And during Goldust versus Savio Vega, they show him in the crowd and it seems like he's no longer chewing his gum. The show was so boring that I was tracking the evolution of Ken Shamrock and his gum chewing, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, God. So Shamrock is in the crowd, and Jerry Lawler decides to tell...
You're skipping
Vince
over
McMahon.
The Tiny Tim segment, though, because we had to show Tiny Tim again.
Why?
I don't know! It doesn't make sense.
Did Tiny Tim maybe die, like, that, like, was this like anniversary of his death?
No,
or something?
No, it was not. Because remember when the only reason I know who this is and the context of this is, remember early on in Retro Raw, I don't know when it was. It was like the second or third show or something.
Oh, there was
like
a Tiny Tim thing, wasn't there?
Yeah, because Tiny Tim had just died, so they showed these segments.
He died
segments
at the end of November. Yes.
Okay, so like probably a month after we started doing Retro Raw, because we started in September. Mm-hmm. So they showed these Tiny Tim segments, and Jerry Lawler, that whole episode, was going on about Tiny Tim, right? And how he had just died and how he was stupid for dying or something. And it was really annoying. So I remember this. So then they show this segment of Jerry Lawler interviewing Tiny Tim here after Miguel Perez being super boring or whatever. I'm like, why in the world are we showing Jerry Lawler versus Tiny Tim? And the only thing I can come up with is the fact that Jerry Lawler has interviewed a celebrity before. I think that's their transition from the Tiny Tim segment to Jerry Lawler with Ken Shamrock. But why the fuck? Like, what was the purpose of this?
I have no fucking idea. I have no idea why all of a sudden we had another Tiny Tim throwback.
Because it wasn't the anniversary of his death, because he just died a few months ago.
Maybe it was because the interview happened in the Manhattan Center. We're back in the Manhattan Center. And then Jerry Lawler's about to do another interview, which is just as terrible. So here's my issue, right? So Jerry Lawler says that he is friends with Ken Shamrock. So he goes over to Ken Shamrock. And Ken Shamrock is perfectly pleasant to Jerry Lawler. And then Jerry Lawler starts, like, saying, you know, tell them how I taught you your UFC moves. And Shamrock's just like, what? and then, like, Jerry Lawler's trying to act like they're best pals. And then Shamrock's basically like, I have no idea who you are.
He's like, Jerry Lawler just,
and Jerry Lawler just leaves. And that's the segment.
Yeah, it doesn't go anywhere. Like, it seemed like Ken Shamrock was going to fight Jerry Lawler or something. Mr. Sandra thought that they were telegraphing an appearance from Taz because Lawler was talking about submissions and, you know, him teaching Ken Shamrock his submissions or something. And Taz was, like, known for submissions or something. I just figured the crowd was bored because I was bored. And that's why they were chanting, "We want Taz." I was chanting, "Why is the show still going on?"
Oh, God.
I don't know.
So, we go from there.
It sounded like Lawler was calling him Kim the whole time. Because Jerry Lawler.
We got a match with Taz versus Mikey Whipwreck. I could not really care less about it, but did you have any thoughts? Sabu did hit the dive off the big R.
Yeah, he jumps off the raw ladders, and that was, he looked like he was going to attack the whistle man. Was that Bill Alfonso who had the whistle?
Yes, it was Bill Alfonso.
I don't know who Bill Alfonso is, but I know that they kept mentioning Bill Alfonso was with
Bill
Taz.
Alfonso used to be a WWF referee.
Oh,
and then
okay.
He went to ECW and became a manager with a whistle.
Yeah, Lawler and Heyman hate each other, like, a lot. Because for all these ECW matches, Paul Heyman is on commentary. So that's sort of interesting. Because Paul Heyman, like, he's just good at that. And it was interesting because Lawler makes some joke about Taz. I think he was talking about Taz. He doesn't say specifically who he's talking about, whether it's Mikey Whipwreck or Taz. I assume it's Taz because Taz seems like more of the star. But something about him being so small that he's from an ant farm or something. He mentioned something about small and ant farm, and I don't remember the actual words because all I have written down is blah, blah, blah. But, and it's been a few days since I watched this, and goodness knows I didn't retain it. But Heyman comes back with, coming from a guy who's 5'10 and was on top of the territory for 76 years. Paul Heyman, I love you. And also, Farouk is backstage during this match because the match doesn't matter at all. And something about the Undertaker is going to feel pain because he's going to fight the Undertaker later on. And he talks about Ahmed Johnson again, you know, not being from the streets and running from his people. And everyone's going to feel the wrath of Farouk. That's when, you know, after that, Sabu jumps off the raw ladders and looks like he's going to attack Whistleman, who is Bill Alfonso. Taz wins with the Taz mission. Bill Alfonso.
I like
a
that
flag.
You call him Whistleman.
He is Whistleman. He keeps blowing a whistle the entire time.
I just love your names for people. Whistleman.
Well, if I don't know someone's name, I'm going to describe their attributes. He is Whistleman. And also on commentary, they keep talking about a surprise coming up. They've been talking about this the past few matches. They're like, there's going to be a huge surprise. I assume the big surprise was not Headbangers versus Legion of Doom, which we got next.
Well, that's where you're wrong. So the Headbangers come out, and then Jerry Lawler says, like, is this the surprise? And they're like, no. The surprise is the return of the Legion of Doom for the first time in 5 years in the WWE.
So they were the surprise.
Yeah, because the Legion of Doom were like they'd left at SummerSlam 92, and we never saw them again and in WWF. And this was their first appearance back. So this was another attempt by Vince McMahon to bring in some big guns, you know, because the Road Warriors had tried to go to WCW in 1996 and it didn't really work out, and they wore those very weird blue shoulder pads, which I'm very uncomfortable about because
it
just never felt right.
Could they have joined the Blue World Order with those shoulder pads?
I mean, you're now going into like meta promotional, inter promotional warfare. But yes, for the purposes of the joke, yes, they could.
Okay.
but like you can see when they get announced that like the fans have no idea they're there and they go apeshit for them.
They did go very apeshit, so I wondered if this was a big surprise return.
However, the weird thing was is that like the Legion of Doom were never a team where you were like, I want to see them have a really long match. And especially when they've just come back, and especially when the Headbangers are quite new. So they have this really long match, and then the big boring brawl ends up with a double countout finish.
Yes, it does. Now, it's interesting because right away in the match, there are Nitro Sucks chants. So I assume the Legion of Doom have been on Nitro?
Yes.
Like,
Legion
they've
of
been
Doom
in WCW since they went away?
Yeah, they went and they were on Nitro in 1996, very briefly.
Okay, because there are also Hogan Sucks chants. Sorry, Kenny. There are also Bischoff Sucks chants.
I appreciate you trying to let me down gently there.
Well,
sorry.
I mean, I thought of you when everyone was chanting Hogan Sucks.
Appreciate it.
You know.
As long as you didn't chant it as well.
I did not. Okay. I couldn't be bothered. So.
fucking yeah.
Well, at least I'm not chanting that he sucks, right? Like, that's good. I don't know. This was not very exciting. I miss the Sisters of Love. Also, I think the Headbangers lose by countout. I don't think it's a double countout, but they say it is. But it's weird because the Legion of Doom is actually in the ring. And commentary doesn't seem to know what's going on. And no one seems to know what's going on. And maybe it doesn't matter. And then the Legion of Doom hits their finisher on the Headbangers after the match. So why didn't they just win?
Questions.
This episode's really bad. And then...
Yep. Please take me through your thoughts of... Because did you know this was coming?
No.
Oh my God.
I sure didn't. Because I thought... Okay, ladies and gentlemen. I thought... That when someone gives a heartfelt, drugged up speech, right, about how they need to go away because they've lost their smile and they need to go away and find it. They need to go back home to San Antonio. They need to rehab their knee, which has a boo-boo, even though they can't be bothered to use a crutch or a brace. Maybe he had a brace on under his slacks. That's not fair. Ollie, see, I gave Shawn Michaels the benefit of the doubt there. Maybe he was wearing a brace under his pants. I had a call from a friend today about how I've been too hard on Shawn Michaels, and I apologize, but I'm about to be hard on Shawn Michaels because holy cow. I thought that when someone went away and was off a television show to go find their fucking lost smile or whatever because their knee hurts, that maybe they would actually be off the show. That maybe they would go away. Maybe they would leave me alone. Maybe they would give me a chance to just settle down a little bit about hating the fact that they are the worst babyface in the world. And yes, I include Roman Reigns in that. Shawn Michaels, worst babyface than Roman Reigns. I stand by it. He is the worst babyface in the world. Can't wait for him to eventually turn heel, because then when I hate him, it'll be justified and maybe I'll be like, yes, you're actually a good performer, right? Because his matches are good, but he is the worst character in the world. So here, after the Headbangers versus the Legion of Doom, we get a Shawn Michaels tribute video as though he has died. I swear, it seems like WWF believes at this point that Shawn Michaels is dead in his grave, because that is the only reason that you would put this many tributes on a show about someone. I don't understand. Tell me a lie. Tell me that you're coming back. Well, that is a fucking lie, because he is coming back, right?
Oh, I really needed that. Really needed that.
They talk more about him on the show than they did when he was champion before, when he wasn't retired. Like, remember when we started Retro Raw and he was the WWF champion and I didn't even know who the WWF champion was because they barely mentioned him? I miss those days, Kenny. I miss the days where we didn't talk about Shawn Michaels all the time.
I've just got a few things that I was thinking about, if you don't mind indulging me for a second.
Of course.
I've known you all my life. At least that's how it seems. Never known my own way, living out of dreams. Now I know you're leaving me and I'll never understand. Before I let you walk away, I have one last demand. Tell me a lie and say that you won't go. Look in my eyes and hold me, even though I realize you have to walk away. Sondra, there's no more yesterday.
Yeah, the irony of this is, if he would have said those exact words, they would not have been a lie. Not a lie at all. Because he's fucking coming back to ruin my life.
Remember, this is Shawn Michaels. Let's keep the lyrics going. They're so good because they're so... they just so don't fit this character. So
they don't.
You always were my angel, flying high above. Always looking out for me, angel that I love.
Who did he look out for? Jose Lothario, who could barely be bothered to care about until he had a fucking heart attack on camera? Because of a camera?
Now my dreams are fading like age-old photographs. They hurt too much to look at now. Reminds me of our past. Tell me a lie and say that you won't go. Look in my eyes and hold me even though I realize you have to walk away. Sondra, no more yesterday. And then the last bit. Maybe we could stay together. Maybe it could last forever. Maybe if you'd just tell me a lie. Maybe then... we'll never say goodbye.
Well, good thing for the person writing that song. That they will get their wish. Not involving a lie, but just involving Shawn Michaels being perfectly fine.
So, once we got Shawn Michaels' obituary...
it Raw, sounds... doesn't it sound like he died, though?
So...
like, okay... Daniel Bryan's retirement, his actual retirement, by the way, not his fake I will be back in a couple months retirement, but his actual retirement was very emotional. And yes, I cried when Daniel Bryan retired. Did we get tribute videos to Daniel Bryan for weeks on end? No, we didn't.
Did you cry here?
Out of frustration? Out of anger? Out of wondering why we're padding out this boring-ass show with Shawn Michaels' tribute video. Yes. Yes, I cried.
So, the story, which is not going to be a shock to people who have followed Mr. Michaels in his career, is that by this time...
See, my question is, at this point, what did they know? Because Dr. James Andrews told us last week that, you know, he doesn't need surgery. He's going to do rehab and we'll evaluate in 4 to 6 weeks. So that is known at this point.
Here's what Dave Meltzer wrote in the March 3rd, 1997 Wrestling Observer newsletter, which pretty much came out like a week after this show. He says that the story as of press time appears that it's becoming more and more acknowledged within the WWF that more than likely Shawn Michaels... More likely than not, his leaving had to do with being burned out from all the travel and pressure and needing a break, combined with the timing of him having to put over Sid for the WWF title on Thursday, Raw Thursday, and knowing he was going to have to follow up in his next high-profile match, having to put Bret Hart over at WrestleMania. The fact that he's good friends with Nash, Hall, and Waltman, all who appear to be very smart in handling their personal business and using whatever leverage they have to make the right moves, that could be a factor. He goes on to talk about how there's little dispute that he had a knee injury, but the belief is that it was something he could have continued to work on had he wanted to, although it was bad enough that any doctor would have recommended taking time off. He was not expected at this point to have any sort of role in WrestleMania. He is not in any kind of rehab other than his knee. And that friends of his have said that in the 10 days since walking away and being away from the pressure, he's found that lost smile he talked about.
Oh, good. It took him a week and a half. Now, my issue is not the fact that he decided that he needed to rehab a knee injury, right? Because that's valid.
But the key thing is he could have worked through it. He could have worked through it. And to walk away because he didn't want to do two jobs. That is the story.
Yes. Yes, that is the story. My bigger issue, though, like, even if he decided he didn't want to work through it, even though Bret Hart and Steve Austin were, you know, reportedly working through injuries themselves that may have been more severe, whatever. Whatever. Fine. If you're hurt, if you're Sin Cara and you, you know, jam your finger in a ladder match and you want to fuck off, whatever. Like, if your knee is hurting and you need to take time and rehab that, fine. Fine. Do that. That's fine. Like, drop your title, rehab your knee, that's fine. My problem is the fact that they treated it as a retirement. They treated it like he would never be back. They ran obituary videos for him for weeks. It has been weeks. Thursday Raw Thursday was, what, a week and a half ago? That he
it was.
Lost his smile and blah, 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 and whatever. And we have had Shawn Michaels tributes since then. We saw Shawn Michaels lose his smile again on In Your House Final Four. We saw Shawn Michaels lose his smile again on the Raw right after that. We saw a fucking Tell Me a Lie video tonight. How long is this going to go on? I mean, my question is, if they don't expect Shawn Michaels to come back at this point, why are they constantly calling attention to Shawn Michaels? Are they going to just mourn him until the end of time? Because Vince? I don't know. Like, that's my one question that I would love to ask Vince McMahon at this point. Out of everything in the entire world, I would love to ask him, why did you fancy Shawn Michaels so much in 1996, 1997? Like, what was it about him that just got your balls in the vice? Like, I don't understand.
The more I watch Retro Raw, I am willing to wager a good $50 that Vince McMahon penetrated Shawn Michaels at some point.
Like, it wouldn't shock me. It's baffling. It's baffling because why run these tribute videos if you're not expecting him to come back? So obviously it seems like they expect him to come back, but they're treating it as though he is dead in the ground. Like, why would you keep his name in our consciousness so much at this point? Like, if someone's retired, if they're gone, give them a tearful retirement, that's fine. But have them actually be hurt enough to retire at that point. Like, the constant tribute and the constant attention and the constant, you need to respect this man, you know, you need to give him all of the respect in the world, like, regardless of how you feel about him, right? Like, whether he has long hair or whether his belly button is pierced or whatever. Like, Vince McMahon just doesn't seem to understand why we don't like Shawn Michaels. We don't like him because he's a fucking prick.
That concludes the Sondra Shawn Michaels monologue portion of Retro Raw Rundown. Please join us next week for the second showing of Tell Me a Lie, the music video.
Please and, tell me they don't show it again.
I can't remember, but I'm pretty sure they probably do. We also get told about next week, you know, that the biggest thing since the Berlin Wall falling down is when the WWF invades Berlin for the European Championship. Now, Sondra,
they show footage of the wall.
They also show footage of fans through a mesh railing.
Yeah.
Has this got you excited for WWF's global journey to Germany?
I feel like this is going to be the grimmest episode of Raw I have ever seen. And I was watching Raw in 2011.
Wait till we get to the South Africa episode.
Oh, oof. No.
Gets worse.
Do they do an apartheid gimmick? Because seriously. That's a legitimate question because I feel like they would.
I'm not going to answer that.
Oh, no. I'll just be kept in suspense. I'm going to forget about this immediately. But, I mean, seriously, all of the ads for the Berlin Raw next week just seem so grim. They're all gray. They, like, all of the footage
paint Berlin
of Germany
as being like, we've just recovered from Hitler.
Seriously.
But that's essentially.
Seriously. It feels like they're showing, you know, the worst parts of Germany. And they're like, join us for Raw.
Yep.
It does not look exciting. It looks like, hey, we just broke out of a prison state and now watch Raw from here.
It's pretty fucking bad.
I mean, the wall's been down for a while. Maybe find something else about Germany to promote.
You would hope. You would hope.
But then again, WWF, I suppose.
WWF. So then we get our last ECW match of the evening. Devon Dudley versus Tommy Dreamer. Mm-hmm. We get Sign Guy getting involved. There's Beulah. There's fucking the Sandman. We get the first ever 3D on Raw.
Tommy Dreamer has a chair right away, and there are all sorts of weapons. And Vince, of course, like, we should draw some lines here. And Heyman's like, this is extreme, blah, blah, blah. And it's like kind of the closest thing to extreme we've seen so far from ECW, because so far there has not been anything extreme whatsoever.
Heyman and Lawler get into an excellent argument on commentary, to be fair.
Yeah, they get heated.
There's one point where Jerry Lawler calls Paul Heyman a jock sniffer.
Yeah, he does. Because he likes to be around wrestlers and has never been in a wrestling ring. And then he says, you know, ECW stands for extremely crappy wrestling. And then Heyman rightly points out that Lawler invited them to Raw and Vince accepted the invitation. Like, he accepted and said, yes, this is a good idea. So he's like, you guys invited me and the owner of the company approved it. So what's your fucking problem? And they're like, nah. They don't have anything to come back to that.
They don't. They have nothing. But in the end, Tommy Dreamer gets the win. We get a 3D from the Dudleys on him. Sandman comes out to make the save. Jerry Lawler just could not give a fuck about any of it, to be fair.
Neither could anyone, because the Undertaker actually talks over the finish of this match. Like, it was kind of clever with Devon getting Beulah in between him and Tommy, and then, like, kicking him in the dick, and Tommy hitting Devon with a DDT on the chair and all that. Like, it was actually kind of a clever finish to a match. I would have been interested to see that. However, I had to rewind to figure out what actually happened, because the Undertaker's giving a really boring promo during the finish of the match, because nobody cares.
Yeah, I mean, this was definitely the best ECW match of the three that we got. They then showed us extended highlights of Sid winning the title back last week from Brett, and Brett being very enraged about it. And Brett would do a sort of strop backstage, which I guess was a sort of rehearsal strop for his Montreal one later in the year.
Yeah, I guess so.
And then we get Todd Pettin yelling at me and Ken Shamrock. So this is where I'm going to bring up Ken Shamrock. Ken Shamrock signed with the WWF the day of this show. And what was interesting about that is that he signed that day? Yep.
Interesting.
And he was expected that day to have signed with New Japan Pro Wrestling. He had pretty much made an agreement with New Japan Pro Wrestling to go there. WCW wanted to talk to him, but WWF ended up signing him to a low 7-figure annual salary.
Really?
So he was making at least, I think it was like low 7 figures for the 3 years. So he was earning at least $1 million, at least.
Which still at that point in time was...
And bear in mind, but at this point, what's different, the difference between WWF then and now, so say he got $1 million, right? He got like a low 7-figure downside guarantee and he got a signing bonus as well. So say he got $1 million. That's his base rate. That's his base pay. He could get $1 million and never work a show, and that's what he makes. But for every show that they work back in 1997, you would earn money for every show you work. Mm-hmm. So for every house show, you would make a percentage of the gate. For every TV, you would make money for TV. So like most guys, we maybe get like a, you know, 150 grand downside guarantee, and then you really make your money on everything else. You know, that's why there used to be like the WrestleMania check that you would get, or the SummerSlam check.
Mm-hmm. Which is why you wanted to be on the big shows, because they were the big paydays.
Exactly. So Shamrock is pretty much locked out here, got this great deal. But now New Japan are fucked, because New Japan had basically I can't remember if they'd done a press conference or they were about to do, no. New Japan had held a press conference on the 19th of February and announced officially that they were running a Tokyo Dome show on April 12th. It was going to be headlined by Hashimoto and Ken Shamrock for the IWGP Championship. And then Shamrock was going to work like three more matches that year. So they'd announced at a press conference that he was coming, but they hadn't fully signed him yet. And then basically Vince McMahon came in and got him, you know.
just kind of swooped in there and...
Swooped in there because, again, this is like, if you want to get someone, you need to really go for it and play hardball. So Vince gave a lot of money out to Shamrock. New Japan felt that they'd been double-crossed by Shamrock because that was why they booked this Tokyo Dome show to do it. And then obviously we got the angle here on Raw where Todd Pettengill does the interview and talks about the Bret and Austin match. I don't know if it's made official here, but I feel like I should just tell you now. I'm sure you've seen the match anyway in the past, but Ken Shamrock goes on to be the referee.
Right,
for
yeah. I have Bret seen the match.
So,
even though I didn't remember that it wasn't for the title, but I have seen the match, yes.
And it'll be funny to see how you feel about it when you've watched it again with all the context.
Yeah, it's interesting because I've seen that match at least twice in the past, but and there are certain spots that I remember, although I get a couple of their matches kind of confused because they go on to have another one later on. And sometimes I forget which spots happened in which match. But yeah, like I'm kind of interested to watch it in context because I think I might enjoy it even more. Given all of the story that's been going on before that, like this interview with Ken Shamrock wasn't particularly exciting, I will say.
No, it was fine. You know, Pettengill's basically just kind of getting over that he's there, and then there's a bit
they
where
they treat him like a big star, which is nice. I felt bad for his wife because she apparently has laryngitis, and they put a microphone in her face anyway, and she's like, "Yeah, it's great." Like, that's not the thing you want to do is have to talk on national television when you don't have a voice.
Although Ken Shamrock did look like the nicest man on the planet. And then like Farouk comes out and basically Shamrock challenges Farouk to a fight. And the fans are like, fucking, yes, come on, Shamrock.
Yeah. They have this cool stare down and everything. And Farouk's all like, oh, UF what? Like cat fighting? This is the WWF where cats grow to be tigers or something like that. And, you know, Ken Shamrock points out that Farouk has goons all around him. He's like, a man stands on his own 2 feet and you've got 2 left feet. Burn from Ken Shamrock there. Maybe he shouldn't speak as much as he should fight.
So yeah, basically Shamrock had all but agreed to New Japan, and then WWF wanted him and they wanted to debut him on Raw, especially with all the talent away in Germany. So they had a meeting and managed to get it done. So Shamrock signed away the chance to go back to do the Ultimate Fighting again, the chance to work in Japan, and he went with the WWF.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I'm intrigued to see more of Ken Shamrock. I've heard different interviews with Ken Shamrock. So when they showed, you know, his father or man who raised him, Bob Shamrock, in the crowd, I was like, aw, I know your backstory. And that's really interesting to me.
We then get The Undertaker versus Farouk as the main event of the show. Now, I am a big Undertaker fan, as we all know.
Yes.
Sondra is not, as we all know.
True.
However, this match is awful.
It's terrible.
And the thing about Undertaker is I don't remember Undertaker having, like, great wrestling matches till the 2000s. He just wasn't, because, like, it's this weird thing.
Kind of slow in plotting.
But that's the thing, he's still kind of being the character. And for years he was the dead man character when he wrestled.
When all of his, like, he just sits up and no sells.
Yeah, because that was what the character was supposed to be. So he's in this weird position where he's like, he's trying to break out of that, but he's still trying to keep elements of it. And it's difficult for him to try and get that right. And then you get Farouk, who, you know, Ron Simmons is a collegiate All-American and former WCW champion, but fuck me, he's sloppy.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus Christ.
He's the kind of guy who, like, if you put him in a brawl situation, like a major Hoss fight or something.
Oh, he thrives there.
Right, like those are the kinds of Farouk matches that I enjoy. This, where the Undertaker just no-sells everything. I mean, Farouk hits the Undertaker with a pile driver near the end of the match, and Undertaker just sits up immediately because his character is I no-sell everything. And that just takes away all of the drama of Farouk to me. Because Farouk is supposed to be this big brawler guy, which is why Farouk versus Ahmed Johnson is a really compelling match, right? Like, not that either of them is super technically sound and they're not going to have the best technical wrestling match. It's not going to be Steve Austin versus Bret Hart, but it's going to be two big guys battering the shit out of each other, which can be enjoyable in its own right. This wasn't that so much because the drama of Undertaker matches for me, my problem with it, and this isn't just like, you know, my bias toward current or against current Undertaker or whatever, I think some of the problem I have with Undertaker at this point is that the drama of Undertaker matches is diminished somewhat because he no-sells everything. So there's no real danger, I guess. Like, it's sort of like when John Cena just always wins, right? Like, the Undertaker just sort of sits up and doesn't get hurt. And that's part
It's interesting to watch The Undertaker back now, because I think for people who watched it at the time, like, you just kind of, you fell in love with The Undertaker character when it was like 1991, 1992. And I guess you just kind of have that familiarity with him.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think if you've not watched him before, I think really sort of 97, 98 is where he begins to become interesting, because he's not just doing that, you know, same two-dimensional thing.
Right.
Of being set up man. But like, Farouk at one point near the end, like, hits a pile driver and Undertaker no sells it, but like, God, I miss the pile driver.
I mean, the pile driver to me, I think especially because I watch wrestling currently and the pile driver is so protected because it's not allowed except for in very select circumstances. It's weird to me to watch this in 1997 and see Farouk of all people hit a pile driver. Right? Because the only people that are allowed to hit pile drivers now are The Undertaker, Kane. Is there anyone else who's even allowed to hit a pile driver in current WWE?
Nope.
I don't think there is. I mean, I remember when CM Punk hit a pile driver on John Cena on Raw that one time, and it was a big deal. Like, it was news because they did not get that cleared, and they did it anyway, and it was messy looking, and it was great. I understand why they don't want a lot of pile drivers, because it's something that can compress the spine and can cause injury. And so from a wrestler's safety perspective, I understand it should be a protected move. I really think it should be. I don't know if that's controversial or whatever, but like, I get it, because you don't really want to risk moves that are that dangerous necessarily. But I think that's one of the things that is interesting about watching 1997 Raw with a 2017 perspective, is when Farouk hit a pile driver, I was like, oh, holy shit. And that's what annoyed me even more when The Undertaker just no-sold it. I was like, that was a fucking pile driver. You should be at least down for two.
Yeah. And then obviously Savio Vega ran in and caused the DQ, because the Nation of Domination cannot have a match that coming in and causing a DQ.
No, not
and
whatsoever.
And then as The Undertaker's getting beaten down by the Nation, the Legion of Doom make the save, and we have the Legion of Doom and The Undertaker sort of cleaning houses as Raw went off the air.
And I have written down, mercifully, this episode is over.
How did, I'm curious for you, I mean, the match was, I'm quite annoyed that the match was so terrible, because I would quite like you to get behind them, but the Legion of Doom, any thoughts from, you know, you've never really seen them before, I don't think, and now you've had your first sort of glimpse of them. Do you see anything that people have kind of, any people always go on about them and how much they love them, did you see any of that in what you saw of them in this show, or was this a bad representation, do you think, of them?
They just look like a spikier Ascension.
What a sad day for all of us here inside the ropes.
Well, I mean, I would like to lie, I would like to tell you a lie and say that they were amazing and that I cared a whole lot. Mm-hmm. But that would be an actual lie, not like Shawn Michaels never coming back. So, or not like Shawn Michaels coming back, because that's not a lie, because he's doing that. I don't know. I fucked that up. But whatever. Like, the Legion of Doom just wasn't that exciting here, I guess. I mean, it didn't help that this Raw in general wasn't that exciting. And a part of the issue with watching this now and not in history is that, like, I don't have the context of knowing who the Legion of Doom are and that they've been away for so long, because all of this is just archive footage for me. And like, yeah, I know that the Legion of Doom have been around at certain points and not been around at certain points, but it's not like I've waited 5 years to see them in the WWF. I've just seen video clips here and there of the Legion of Doom, and now they're on this Raw, so I'm like, oh, look, the Legion of Doom, that's nice for them. It's not going to be as exciting to me as, and I mean, I guess I get the comparison between the Ascension and the Legion of Doom. Like, it's kind of sad that was my first thought, was their spikes are cooler. So I like that.
Overall, I mean, I'm guessing that this episode will be a thumbs down.
It is a thumbs down for sure.
Overall thoughts?
it was just so disjointed. Like, the whole thing just felt very disjointed. ECW Invasion, I think, just didn't really click with me because I haven't really watched ECW, so I don't have a connection to those characters. And the people in the arena seemed to love it. Like, they were chanting ECW stuff the whole night. They were chanting We Want Sandman. They were chanting, you know, like you said, Candido. They were chanting at Sunny. They were really, really into this, and I'm glad. If you were in that live crowd and you enjoyed this, I can see where it was a big deal and it was really exciting for people that, you know, ECW was invading WWF and that's awesome. But just not having that historical context, I was just bored. And it didn't help that they put interviews over every single ECW match as if to say, this matters as much as our tag team division, because this is what we usually do to our tag team matches.
Well, next week is the finals of the European Championship from Deutschland Hall in Berlin, Germany, Sandra. We have a packed card next week. We have Bret Hart facing Hunter Hearst Helmsley for the first time in our run here. We have Rocky Maivia defending the Intercontinental Championship against Vader. We have Psycho Sid defending the WWF Championship against Mankind. And we have the finals of the European Championship tournament between Bulldog and Owen.
I mean, that sounds like it could be okay.
So there you go.
I hope.
The Bret Owen match is great.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I really am.
So with that, Sandra, we're obviously, if you want to follow along with us on the pay-per-views for the retro shows, patreon.com/insideropes. We're up to 300 and where are we at now? We are up now to 314.
Oh, wow. I haven't checked it in a little
Patreon
while.
Patreon pledgers. Thank you very much to everyone who's pledged. We really appreciate it. And I'm pleased to let you know that if you are a pledger of Inside the Ropes on Patreon, you are going to be the first people 1 week before WrestleMania to hear our exclusive 60-minute interview with Jim Ross, talking his WrestleMania memories from WrestleMania 9 through to WrestleMania 13, his return from Bell's Palsy at WrestleMania 15, why Austin Hogan didn't happen at WrestleMania 18, his thoughts on Donald Trump at Battle of the Billionaires.
Oh boy.
Tons and tons of stuff.
I haven't heard this yet. I'm kind of intrigued. I want to listen to it.
Yeah, well, I'll send it to you sooner.
Cool, because I'm going to have to post it, so I figured you would.
We've just recorded that literally yesterday, so that'll be going up right before WrestleMania week. So there's tons of content going to be going up, more interviews, more podcasts, all that good stuff. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. Also, Sandra, where can people find you on Twitter?
Find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. And follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes.
So thank you for listening, everyone. Thank you for all your lovely, lovely support. We very much appreciate you.
You're all wonderful. We really do appreciate it.
You are. And also make sure to look out on the Patreon page for about a week and a day from now, 8 days from now, where David and I will have an exclusive Fastlane review up on Patreon as well, talking that show. And it's late, so I'm just kind of babbling now, but... Have a good week, and we will talk to you soon.
Bye, everybody.